Well, good morning. Good to see you in here at home. We are honored to get to worship with you. Those that I see every week, it is good to see you every week because there's not a lot of people I see every week. And some of you, this is the first time I've seen you in a long time. I'm so glad to see you. Every face that we haven't seen in a while, it's a blessing that mini reunion. And those of you at home, know that you are loved, know that you are missed, and know that when you feel good about coming back, we're ready for you and we will be eager to welcome you back. But in the meantime, know that we still love you and we still need you and we are here for you. So even if you may feel isolated, know that you're not alone. Well, I want to start this week with something light. Something that is a bit heartwarming, something that has been around for 30 years now. It is a commercial that first aired in 1989 and has run every Christmas season since. Let's watch. All right, show of hands, how many of you have seen that? I'm seeing a lot of hands go up here. I'm seeing some hands at home. I appreciate you participating. Okay, so it's been around for 30 years now. As I said, it has become a Christmas classic. It is cute. It is fun. It is heartwarming. It's one that a lot of people look forward to. Okay, so in just a moment, I want to show you a commercial that Hershey's put out this year. It's a slight variation on this classic commercial. And I'm guessing that when Hershey's decided to put out the 2020 version of this commercial, they thought it would be simple and sweet and just add a little extra joy to people's Christmas this time of year, but I will warn you before you see it that when many people saw this year's version, they were outraged. I don't know what your reaction will be, and so I want to invite you right now just to take a deep breath in preparation. Okay, I can't tell because everyone's masked up whether you took a deep breath or not. So just in case, this may not go well for me. I may be taking a risk here. People at home, just grab the arms of your lazy boy and hold on tight in case this turns south pretty quickly. Rob, I guess let's go ahead and take a risk. Let's show the 2020 version. People at home, I'm seeing a lot of angry eyes right now, just staring daggers into me from their pews. So if this Hershey's Kisses commercial of a dad and daughter taking one of those kisses and making cookies out of it, if it leaves you angry, I would like to invite you to send your feelings in an email to craig.beauregard.lair3@gmail.com. Get it all out. Just let him know how you feel about that commercial. Now, fun fact, side note, this Craig's email is the one that I give to stores when they ask, would you give us an email when they want to send information? And I would invite you to do the same. Really cuts down on the spam that way. So I appreciate that, Craig. Okay, another side note, you can probably tell, I made up that address. I thought about showing Craig's actual email, and since we published this out on the web, I decided not to. What I did not make up is that there were actually a lot of people who were outraged about that commercial. And I read an article about it, and so I decided to hop on YouTube, and I saw not only the video, but I saw the comments, and there were a lot of actually vile and racist comments that showed up on YouTube. Surprise, surprise, that there's some trolls out there. It got so bad that Hershey's had to disable the comment section on their YouTube page. But even after all of those were taken out, you could still read other places on Facebook and Twitter where people were commenting on the changes and letting everyone know how they felt. Here's what some of those comments I can read, sound like. Just when I thought 2020 couldn't get worse, my favorite Christmas commercial has been changed. The perfect representation of 2020, completely ruined. They updated the Hershey's Kisses Christmas Bell commercial, and I am not okay. Hershey's Kisses have changed their Christmas commercial. Truly, 2020 is the worst year ever. I am angry at the Hershey's CEOs because of their latest Christmas commercial. Hershey's redoing their Christmas commercial is personally the last straw of 2020 for me. All right, now is some of that in jest? I'm sure it is. As some people read the outrage of others, then people jump on and they have a little fun with it. But some of the comments I read, it was obvious that people were disappointed. It was obvious that people, at least some, were upset. Even some were angry at the audacity to change the commercial about a commercial that they love, about a piece of chocolate that is 0.2 ounces. And how should I put this kindly? It is chocolate that's okay, I guess, as far as chocolate goes, but Kisses aren't at the top of my chocolate list by any means. So the question is, why? Why the frustration? Why the disappointment? Why the outrage? And most of us know the answer to that even without asking the question, don't we? It doesn't take a genius to figure it out. It is because we all have preferences that we're partial to. We all form traditions over time, and then we hold those dear. It is human to develop rituals and routines that bring us joy, and they create a feeling of normalcy. They provide comfort, a sense of grounding and guidance, and especially with religious practices, those preferences and traditions and rituals and routines, they can help us feel close to God and connected to God and close to one another and connected to one another in the process. And all of that can be good, but if someone comes around and then changes those or challenges those, ooh boy, watch out, right? Now, instead of talking about changing a beloved chocolate commercial, imagine we're talking about a religious tradition that is cultural and ethnic as well, all rolled into one. And it's not something that just shows up one season a year, but it shows up one day of the week. And imagine it's something that's been around not for 30 years, but 1,500 years. Well, you don't have to imagine it. Let's just listen to some stories about that from Luke 6. So if you have your Bible, feel free to open up to Luke 6, and we're going to spend some time there and a few other passages. And we're going to listen as Chris and Jordan Walker read to us from Luke 6.
Luke 6, verses 1 through 11. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and his disciples began to pick some heads of grain, rub them in their hands, and eat the kernels. Some of the Pharisees asked, "Why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" Jesus answered them, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and taking the consecrated bread, he ate what was only lawful for the priest to eat. And he also gave some to his companions." Then Jesus said to them, "The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath."
On another Sabbath, he went into the synagogue and was teaching, and a man was there whose right hand was shriveled. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. But Jesus knew what they were thinking and said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Get up, stand in front of everyone." So he got up and stood there. Then Jesus said to them, "I ask you, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or destroy it?" He looked around at them all, and he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He did so, and his hand was completely restored. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were furious and began to discuss with one another what they might do to Jesus.
Luke 6, verse 1 through
11. Okay, so quick refresher. Sabbath was established on Mount Sinai with Moses when it was literally written in stone. Exodus 20. This is right after Israel has been freed from slavery in Egypt. This is before they began their wilderness wandering in earnest. And Sabbath is established as a protection from overwork. And it's a time of reflection on God. It is a gift from God for rest and renewal. It distinguishes Israel from other nations around them. And in Exodus 20, it's tied to the creation story. Remember, God worked 6 days, and then he rested on the seventh. I want you to set aside this day for rest and renewal and remembrance. And then it's reiterated in Deuteronomy, which means second law, in Deuteronomy 5. And this is after wilderness wandering, before they enter into the promised land. And this time, God ties it to who they were as a people enslaved. And there's an emphasis not just on rest for yourself, but I want you to give rest for those who are servants, even the animals, the land. You know what it was like to be oppressed. Don't be oppressive kind of people. When you cross the tracks, when some of you come into positions of power or prominence, you need rest. But all these who are under your care need rest and renewal as well. Sabbath is a good gift from God. But when you read through the Old Testament, you also start to realize that even though there's some details, some specifics, there's a lot that's not fleshed out in the Old Testament. What exactly do we mean when we say don't work? What does it mean to work? What does it mean to not work? We don't get all the details. We don't get a lot of explanation. How do we apply this generous gift from God? There's a lot of gray areas. What's the true purpose in the first place? Well, we get some description, but there's a lot that's undefined. And so what do humans do in the absence of information? Over time, we develop our preferences and our strong opinions, and we discuss and then debate interpretations and applications, and then we build up traditions that help us understand, and eventually we no longer see those traditions as traditions, and they're not open for discussion. There's no room for disagreement. Our traditions, in the end, become indistinguishable from the original. The traditions themselves become law on top of law, tradition on top of tradition on top of tradition that we don't even see as tradition anymore. If we can do that, have the kind of emotional reaction that people do to a 15-second Hershey's Kisses commercial that shows up at Christmas time every year, imagine what we do with a 1,500-year-long tradition that was seen as part of the heart of what it meant to be a person of God. And then Jesus shows up. And I think it's important to recognize that Jesus doesn't show up and set out to stir things up just to start something with religious leaders. What Jesus does in all of his life is he stays true to the mission of God, to love everyone in word and in deed, to love them in every encounter, in every situation, every time he sees them, regardless of the day or the circumstances. And we heard about two of those encounters in Luke 6. Is it okay for his disciples to pluck grain? They're not harvesting grain, just pluck grain and eat it on the Sabbath. Is that okay? Is it okay to heal a man with a disability in his right hand on the Sabbath? The right hand being extremely critical for life and functioning at any time, but especially in the ancient world. That's how you take care of yourself. But when you start to read through the Gospel of Luke, then you'll see this is not the only encounter, the only clash that Jesus has on the Sabbath with religious leaders. So there's another in Luke 13. And in it, a woman with a debilitating condition that she has had for 18 years comes to Jesus. She has been over, and she's been over so badly that she cannot straighten up at all. I have actually known someone, had a family member with this condition. The only way he could cure it was to have surgery. He didn't want to do it, and he could not get around. It was excruciating to watch. Is it okay for Jesus to heal her on the Sabbath after 18 years of this affliction? Or the next chapter, Luke 14, a man comes to Jesus who had extreme swelling in his body, or what today might be diagnosed as edema. Is it okay for Jesus to heal him on the Sabbath? Now, I think it's fair for us to take a step back from these stories and acknowledge that because we don't observe Sabbath and we don't feel like we're under Sabbath law, then when we read these stories and we read about their preferences and traditions and rituals and routines, this is the kind of story that can feel a little absurd to us. Why are they getting so worked up about this? Not unlike when people who are outside of church settings look in and listen in to conversations and debates and fights, and they're like, I don't get it. I don't understand. It seems odd to us because these aren't our preferences. These aren't our rituals. These aren't our long-standing traditions. And when Jesus calls them on their hypocrisy, it's easy for us to pile on because we can see it clearly in others. So look at 13:14. This woman who is bent over, there is a disgusted synagogue ruler, a ruler of the church, and he says, there are 6 days for work, so come and be healed on those days, not on the Sabbath. Now, if I am that woman, I'm thinking, oh, I'm sorry. Is my 18-year-long affliction inconveniencing you on the Sabbath? Am I treading on your tradition by wanting healing? I can't get around, but I guess I'll go seek him out some other day when it's more convenient for you. I'm outraged on her behalf. Jesus comes at it from a different perspective. He says, you hypocrites, because there's one who spoke up, but there are others who are condemning. Doesn't each of you on the Sabbath untie your ox or donkey from the stall and lead it out to give it water? Now, there's something interesting happening in the Greek. Because the word Jesus uses for untying an ox or a donkey is the root word that he uses to describe when the woman is set free. She is untied, released from her affliction. You would untie an ox or a donkey, but you would not see this woman untied from this 18-year-long affliction. It can be so easy to practice grace when it suits us and practice legalism when it involves others. And Jesus says, hey, give your animals water. That's a good thing. But guess what? She is a daughter of Abraham. She is a child of God. Set them all free. Let the grace flow. Or in chapter 14, when Jesus heals the man with edema, he asks a hypothetical question. If one of you has a child or falls into a well on the Sabbath day, will you not immediately pull it out? It's hypothetical, but it's also rhetorical because we know the answer to that, and they know the answer to that. Of course they would, because it is so easy to practice grace when it benefits us. And it can be easy to practice legalism when it involves others. Why is that so tempting? But what Jesus reveals is that everyone is worthy of mercy and compassion and grace, and needs do not rest. So God's mercy and compassion and grace do not rest. And in the process, what Jesus really does is not just pull the curtain back on Sabbath, but what he does is reveal the true heart of God behind it in the first place. So think back or look back to the stories in chapter 6. Jesus says, first of all, what I did actually has precedence. David did that before. Have you not read what David and his men did when they picked grain or when they took consecrated bread on the Sabbath? But he says, guess what? Not only am I a correct interpreter of the law, but I am Lord of the law. I know the content, but I also know the true intent. And that's the key, because the religious leaders have missed both. Jesus is not anti-tradition. He's not just about undercutting the rituals. In fact, he honors the Sabbath. And I think Jesus would say, by breaking their traditions, he is more closely honoring the heart of the Sabbath and the heart of God. And it gets to the ultimate question, because the question they're asking Jesus is, who do you think you are to break these Sabbath rules and rituals, which they wouldn't describe as traditions, but law? And what Jesus is ultimately asking is, who do you really think God is? Because if you understand the heart of God, then you understand the heart of the things that God gives us, like Sabbath. Is God mostly concerned with rituals and regulations and rules, or is God mostly concerned with reconciliation and restoration and renewal and righteousness and justice? Does God want to see us jump through religious hoops, or is God ultimately offering help and hope? This is how Jesus asked it. What is Sabbath really all about? Doing good or doing evil? Saving life or destroying it? And I think these are the kinds of questions that we have to continually ask. What is truly at the heart of God? When do our traditions, our rituals, our practices, when do they help that and when do they hinder that? And if we find places where our traditions hinder that, then are we willing to alter our preferences to follow God's priorities? These last 9 months have forced all kinds of changes in every aspect of our lives. And there are some things that we have always done in our lives, even as a church, that we can't do right now. And there are other things we do, but we have to do them differently, and it can be challenging, and it can feel odd and off. And there's been aspects of that that many people have shared with me are really hard, and I share that. I get that. But I think there are other parts that can be beneficial if we will allow them to be, because it forces us to ask questions about everything we do. What's most important about our lives? What's the cream that rises to the top? What's most significant when it comes to our rituals and traditions? Why do we do what we do and how we do them? Our goal is not to get religious rituals right. It never has been. And it's certainly not to point out, if we think we get them right, all the ways that others get them wrong. So I've had a lot of people tell me, while I've been stuck at home, I've watched the Chenal service, and I've watched the service at this church and that church and this church and that church. And they're seeing lots of different ways that people do it, and lots of great ways that God is moving in lots of different churches. And I think that's wonderful. I'm convinced God has never been all that interested in us getting religious rituals right. What God is interested in is a world set right and lives set right in all the places that they've gone wrong. God doesn't burden us with rituals. And so I say this to say, don't feel guilty if you can't practice some of the things that you love, some of the traditions that you lean on, some of the preferences that you have. Miss them, absolutely. But don't beat yourself up over them, because traditions and rituals, they are not hoops that God gives us to jump through so that we maintain God's favor. They are grace and gifts given by God to remind you that God already favors you. God already loves you. Sabbath is a gift, not that you have to work for God's love, but that you can rest in God's love. After all, Sabbath was made for us. We weren't made for Sabbath. Religious rituals are made for us. We're not made for them. So we know we're on the right track with our religious traditions, our faith traditions, if instead of leaving us guilty, if something doesn't go exactly right, they remind us that God is the one who makes us right. And so instead of guilt, we feel grateful and filled and loved and wanted. We know we're on the right track with traditions if we can yield our preferences and practices to ensure that others who are hungry, spiritually or physically, that they can be fed, and that those who are afflicted can be healed, and that those who've been left out can finally feel included. We know we are on the right track with our faith traditions if they don't make us more judgmental of others, but more merciful and loving. If they don't leave us feeling better than others because we practice them and practice them in the correct way, but if they make us better people in the process. We know we're planted in the fertile soil of God's grace when it produces the fruit of grace and love and mercy. And so we end this morning with a reminder that there is one who draws our life in, who offers hope and healing, and we celebrate that Redeemer right now.